Welcome to The Psychology of Success. I'm Caden Terry, and each week I help young hustlers actualize their infinite potential by featuring interviews with world-class leaders in business, sports, and health. Now let's get into The Psychology of Success.
All right, before we dive into this episode, I got to give you guys a little bit of background on Don Watkins. So you'll hear me talk about it, but Don, he is a wildly successful entrepreneur. 70 years old, has a ton of experience. Basically, he started a company that sold mouse pads, one of the first to do it in the nation, scaled it, then started selling air fresheners too, one of the first to do it as well, and ends up exiting his company and selling it for hundreds of millions of dollars. And now he just gives back to the community. He has 5 different charities in Africa. And the way that I met Don, I actually got invited to go to his entrepreneurship class at Utah Tech. So I've actually been sitting in on that class, and I'm going back to speak to the class at the end of October. But guys, let me tell you what, you will want to listen to this episode all the way through. It is absolutely incredible to see how just his journey. I mean, he was living in a motorhome for when he was younger with 4 kids, just hustling and just grew his company. Now he gives back by teaching, running charities, and plays pickleball every day, just living the life. He shows up to class wearing a Hawaii shirt and flip-flops, and he's just talking business, man, real-world stuff. And I was so impressed. I said, you know what, Don, I've heard a lot about you. A lot of your students have said, I need to interview you. Let's do it. So hope you guys enjoy the episode. Make sure to share this with a friend. Give us a review at the very bottom if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That helps us out a ton to spread the message, but let's jump right into it. All right, welcome back to the Psychology of Success podcast. For all of our young hustlers out there, keep your eye out because soon we're going to be announcing the winner circle and how you can apply for memberships. As a lot of you guys may have seen, we had our last event. We had 20. We kept it super exclusive. We had 20 people show up and sign up for a membership. We brought in Trevor Cowley, who's the host of the biggest podcast, one of the biggest podcasts in the nation. Owner of Easier Accounting, took everyone golfing, gave them swag, and networked. And since then, the past 3 months, 4 months, those hustlers have gone on to start different businesses together and make money together and have connected within the winner's circle. So stay tuned for that if you're a young hustler looking to surround yourself with other like-minded individuals. It is the spot to be. But I'm super excited. Today we have Don Watkins on the podcast. So Don, it's so funny because Kyler, who's a member of the winner's circle, total hustler. He was our hustler of the week a couple weeks ago. He started a turf installation company from Don's class at Utah Tech University. It was a competition, right?
Yeah.
And he ended up winning.
Yeah, he ended up winning, and he followed the formula, the CAR formula.
Okay.
The CAR formula is C for copy a business. A is for find a little angle off that business. And R is, do you have the resources? So I hate to jump in so fast. First of all, thank you for having me come in. I love Utah Tech. I love the students. I've been here teaching as a volunteer 7 years, 4 classes a semester. I love it. I live up north in the summer, have a little farm and ranch up there in Alpine. But like I tell people, my wife doesn't listen to me anymore. My kids don't listen to me anymore. Grandkids don't listen. Come down here, the kids think I'll make them $1 million.
Yeah.
And then the last day of class, they say, go get a real job. No, not, not really. But no, I do really push why businesses, I think, so many fail is we're just shooting for the stars too quickly.
Yeah.
Instead of figuring something to start with at the bottom of the ladder and getting legitimate with it. So Kyler was a great example of turf company. And found a niche in that turf opportunity. Timing's great here in St. George. And he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He and his partners are diligent, work ethic, you know, intentional. So So they did it on their own, but amazing. I love Kyler.
So here's the cool thing about Don and why you guys will really want to listen right now. So I'm not a student at Utah Tech, but I got invited by Kyler to go sit in on one of your classes. And I sat there and I was like, holy crap, like this is real world stuff.
Yeah.
Because you always hear that like college is like, you're not going to learn real world stuff with business. It's just taught by professors that don't have experience. But Don has experience with
lots of failures.
Lots of failures. Yeah, that's another word for it.
You know, I started, yeah. And of course, I teach under the direction with our partner with Chris Brown.
Who's amazing to me.
I don't have a PhD. And of course, Chris has his own big business. But that little story was when I was running a pretty good-sized business, I went down and volunteered 20 years ago at BYU one day a week to talk to the students about retail marketing and stuff. And half my stories were failures, and the kids ate it up. They got all these super smart professors, but they loved hearing that someone as average as me could make it in business. So I started doing that for about 7 years, and I was... when I still had my business at UVU, I taught there for about 5. But then I wanted to come down, live down here in the winter and ride bikes and exercise pickleball and do all that. And I go, hey, can I get involved in Utah Tech? And Chris Brown had just been hired. And he said, oh, I'd love it if you'd be a partner. So we've been a partner for 7 years. And now I also, Sam Clark, now a new entrepreneur teacher, because the program's growing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I teach with him as well. So having a riot. Kids, I love the kids.
Wow. Okay, so tell us how you got into business in Florida.
I'll try to cut it down a little bit, but I wasn't the best student in the world. So at college, I was kind of, daydreaming and going, what am I going to do in these classes? And I ended up in one of the summers selling real estate and up in Provo Hills. And all of a sudden, I was in an office doing my homework for a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden, Bob Driggs, who became the vice president of BYU, came in and went over and sold him a townhome. And instead of making $2.35 an hour, I made $1,700 commission. I go, this is for me. So long story short, I ended up being very fortunate in building a pretty good-sized real estate company with a brother and a construction company. And we built some pretty nice homes. And by age about 28, still not finished in BYU with my degree.
Really?
No. My dad came to me, and we had a big development. I had a nice home in Alpine, about 28 years of age, 4 kids by this time. A nice home with 3 mortgages on it, because leverage, real estate was booming. So the more you can build, the more you can borrow, the more you're going to make.
Man.
So then my dad came to me and he said, son, you're a good son. You're a good father, good husband, and you got way too much debt. I go, oh, Dad, you're living in the Depression years. 2 years later, I got homes all over and stuff. Interest rates go to 22% commercial loan rates. When I was selling real estate, rates were between 7 and 11 back 40, 50 years ago. And so this 2 or 3% that you guys have heard about for the last 10 years or so, that was unheard of.
Really?
And you'd think it was the opposite, back then that was normal. But then interest rates went to 13, mortgage rates 13 and commercial 22. So all real estate stopped. I had a big development in Bountiful called Sunset Hollow. We had just got going. Long story short, 2 years later, my dad's prophecy of too much debt, I luckily sold my home, sold my Mercedes, sold my boat, didn't have a bad credit rating, and had 0 assets. Starting all
wiped
over
out.
Again at age 30.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So you get wiped out. What's the next step?
Luckily, the first step I did, the best deal I ever made in my life, was my wife. She's an amazing lady, and... one strategy to consider is marrying someone that hadn't had a silver spoon. And her dad was an amazing man who I just, top of the list of people I admire, was a social worker. And they didn't care a lot about money, but cared about helping people. Mm. And that, I just really admired it. But luckily my wife, I'd put her in a big, nice house and in a big, beautiful area. And I said, well, looks like now we're out looking for a rental. I go, looks like you married a loser. And she goes, oh, it wasn't your fault. I'm not worried about you. We'll do fine in life. And that's quite a lady.
Wow.
And that's quite... So I had what I call stinking thinking for 3 days, going, I'm a loser. I'm not that smart. I'm not that sharp. I did some dumb things. And then I went back to work and said, okay, let's get back to work. Quit moaning. Quit feeling sorry for yourself. Let's go back to work.
Wow. So you're going back to work without your degree. It sounds like you didn't finish your
school. No. Well, actually, funny story is my little brother is 8 years younger than me. And he was at BYU. And the only thing that kept me working on my degree at night, and it wasn't a difficult degree, it was one less than communications, called University Studies, where I kind of put my own program together. I'm a strategist. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I am pretty good at problem solving and strategy.
Getting it done.
And so with my little brother, the one thing I wanted to do is beat him to graduate. And true story is he graduated in the afternoon. I graduated in the morning.
Let's go.
But anyway, nice. So I'm finding myself, I went back to start selling some real estate to make some money. I really didn't love it. It wasn't a business for me. It was just, it's great, it sells, but I wanted to build a business. And I had a friend from my mission. I went to Alaska, British Columbia, and I had a friend who, Gary Deaton, that was working for AT&T, great job. And he said, Don, what are we going to do? I go, you want to go? You've got a great job. I don't have a job. I'm commission sales. And he says, yeah, but I know bad things happened in the economy. It wasn't your fault, which half of it was my fault. I didn't need to grow that fast. I didn't need to have all that debt. I could have got equity partners, not made as much money, not worried about being a millionaire at 30, would have worked just fine. I have some friends who did it that way. And they can handle the low times because they would not overly leverage with debt. Mm-hmm. But he said, oh, no, we'll be great. I don't want to go to New Jersey where all top AT&T sales guys goes. And I knew he was a winner. By their fruits you shall know them. And I think he had confidence in me, and I had confidence in him. And he. So long story short, we in 1983, timing's such a big deal. And it was the advent of the PC computer and then Macintosh. I was living in the Bay Area. Well, not at the time I wasn't. I grew up in Centerville, Utah, and then moved to the Bay Area in eighth grade. But Steve Jobs is just a couple years older than me, and he, with the advent of the Apple PC, and all of a sudden we go, hey, someone we knew was making dust covers for Atari, Commodore, little home computer type products and making dust covers. I helped this fellow get a license for Texas Instruments. He said he'd give me a commission. But long story, he kind of screwed us. So we go, hey, we can make dust covers. How can we do this? Went to a fabric shop, found Intex Plastics, went to L.A., went into a big factory and said, hey, we want to buy vinyl. They said, who are you guys? And we were nobodies. But a man by the name of Don Garrison, who taught me a lesson for the rest of my life, I don't care how big or how little you are, I'll take care of you. So he said, you guys, what are you doing? I like you guys. Well, we want to build a dust cover company. Well, who's your sellers? We go, we don't know. He goes, okay, I'll take you over to Lee's Wrapping, a Korean fellow.
Okay.
We started making some samples, which now we call, of course, minimal viable product. He kept his job at AT&T. I was still selling real estate. We got samples made for the Apple computer of dust covers. Took them back to Salt Lake City. Key element was we gave them for free to the Apple store. Said, hey, we knew we were in them for $2. We sell them to the store for $5. We said, please sell them for $10. You can have the money, but don't alter the test market. We want the truth. And so they marketed them for $10. They sold great. And we go, Gary, I think we've got a proven product. So I went and bought a motorhome, put 4 kids in it. He got the products made. I went out in the Western United States selling them door to door. First of all, to Arizona. I'd set my kids up in behind a church or in a state park. And I'd take my little new Subaru out door to door to computer lands, business lands, selling computer products. And ended up about 2 months later being in the Bay Area. And my partner called and said, hey, you see that little mat that's a mouse sits on? I go, yeah. He goes, well, why can't we make those? So we found it felt like it was nothing different than scuba gear. So we found out a rubber company. Didn't have the internet in those days. We had these huge library books of different manufacturers and found out Grondike Rubber Company in New York. We called them and said, hey, we sent them a sample of the competitors. The first company ever to make a mouse mat was called Mouse Tracks.
Okay.
Out of San Francisco. It's just a regular mouse mat, but super thick. Company Grondike says, oh, we can send rolls of that to you. similar, thinner. They sent us rolls, but now we got to cut it, and it doesn't work to cut it with scissors. So we found a Belter Steel Rule. We called them up, and they go, send the rolls to us. We'll die cut it. So we die cutted them, and we were into them about 40 cents and sold them for $2 to the store to compete with the other company. And it just kind of computer accessories then for us kind of blew up at that point in time where we started making mouse mats, document holders, wrist rests, simple computer accessories, selling them throughout the United States, trade shows. Matter of fact, I was going door to door to computer stores, and then people said, hey, why don't you go to a trade show? I go, what's a trade show? They go, well, that's where you could go, and everybody will come to you instead of driving around. Well, that's the advantage of starting a company is a new concept. We didn't have any competitors.
Yeah.
So we could do stupid things. So pretty soon, after about 3 months in the motorhome, my wife said, I said to my wife, we're not going to go back east because now there's trade shows. I don't need to do. And she was disappointed. She was liking the...
Really? The experience?
Yeah.
Traveling everywhere from school?
Yeah. She
what a supportive wife.
Yeah. She
a lot of trust, too. Because after you losing all the money with real estate, you tell her, hey, put the kids in a motorhome. We're going cruising.
Yeah.
Get comfortable.
Well, she wasn't, what do you call it, a high leverage woman? Not leverage.
High maintenance.
Yeah. She's amazing. And we have 7 kids now, and it's amazing. But that's kind of how we got started. My partner would get it all made, ship it out, and go to trade shows and just keep adding. It's interesting, I think. At that time, my new goal was never to be a millionaire. My new goal was just to make enough money to survive. And then we just kept after it day after day, week, and always ran a little scared. And it just kept building, 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 and building.
What do you mean ran a little scared?
You know, always worried that someone was going to knock us off. Someone was going to do it better than us. Just that competition of just not getting cocky. Uh-huh. Matter of fact, I do have a cocky story. We became by far the largest. There's probably 1,000 companies that make mouse mats. We made over 30 years, 70, 80 million. So we became the largest of every type you could ever think of.
Are you serious? The largest.
But Fellows Corporation, if you go into Staples, they make a lot of office products. And one of them, shredders, they make shredders and different things. Well, we were making mouse mats for them, private label, and then putting their name on it, and then they'd ship it out. So we not only were making product for in our own brand, but under other companies' brands. And they came one to buy us, and it didn't work out, thank goodness. I probably would have sold a company, you know, at that time. This was probably, we ran the business for 30 years, but after about 10 years, they wanted to buy us for $6 million. And I go, let's partner, $3 million for us. $3 million.
Yeah, I know, walk away. And no more motorhome.
And it sold for about 100 times that 30 years later. So I was really glad that still didn't work out.
Good for you. But was it still just you two?
No, over the life of the business, we looked at it as good people make you money, don't cost you money. And so we hired a lot of people. And when we sold the company, we probably had 8 millionaires. That we give ownership. If they came in and they were intrapreneurs, as I call them, I think I was one of the first to coin that term. But intrapreneurs, when we saw that they were good enough to go do their own thing, we made them owners.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we gave them stock, so they were locked in.
So let's hear that story, the exit story. So you're doing it for 30 years.
Oh, all my partners. Hey, let's sell the company. Let's sell the company. So slow down.
Okay. We got to get to the whole story.
Slow down here. So again, remember going back to I didn't care about being a millionaire.
Yes.
We
paying the bills.
Able to get somehow guys like you that are just your winner circle and the Kylers and Cadens and others that just is, I was able to recruit them in and say, hey, this is great to start your own business, but this is a pretty well guaranteed one too, that you can have all your dreams and we'll let you, I'll get out of the way. A lot of entrepreneurs don't know how to get out of the way. I go, hey, I made more money with smarter people than me. And so we were able to really grow the company with these intrapreneurs.
Okay.
And one of them's name was Chris, Chris Anderson, and Chris now runs a $1 billion company, but Chris came on board and he was really just a terrific salesperson, did a great job and set him up on commission. And after a little while, he goes, any chance I can get some ownership? And I said, yeah, another year, we'll start talking about it. And but after about 15 years in business, maybe he'd only been with me two, he goes, well, we're big in computer accessories and you have a national sales manager you're loyal to. I think we ought to go into car air fresheners. And at the trade show, he goes, that's a consumable. Our mouse mats, they last on a stinking desk for 5 years. Let's get something. I go, what, are we going to be the next Coke company? You know, we're drinking and they buy it over and over. He goes, no air fresheners. I said, no, I've taught at college that you don't go into mature industries. See, when we started with the computer accessories, that was new in the industry. So they didn't have a lot of competition. Whereas at air fresheners, Pine, the tree company, had been around forever.
Okay.
And so that's mature industry. No, we got some technology and an angle they don't have. I go, what? Well, we had this sticky pad technology, which you could put a sticky pad on your dash, no adhesive, no magnet, and a car cell phone would stick on it. That was one of our patented products. Yeah. But anyway, remind me to go back to the coffee story too in a little bit later. But anyway, we made this new car air freshener. We called it the Bug, and put in air freshener. It worked far better than anything else. We took it to Walmart, viable product. We spent $650,000 on it.
Yes,
so that's hardly a minimum viable product. We went, took it to Walmart, gave them all out, and the buyer there, which was a new buyer to us because we were with the computer accessory buyer.
Yeah, totally different.
Cell phone buyer. That buyer goes, whoa, everyone's here loving these. We'll bring it in. Long story short, they brought it in. It didn't sell. It was too innovative. That's why I go back to car. Copy, angle, it was too big of an angle. You got to have millions of dollars to educate people. So when buyers came into that store, Walmart buyer, and go to the air freshener, they go, wow, what? I've never seen anything like that. And we didn't have the money to do advertising and all that. So anyway, Chris Anderson, who later became the CEO of the company, he went to the buyer and he goes, I think we were too ahead of our game with this technology. So sometimes technology, I mean, obviously the Apple iPhone didn't start with the Apple iPhone. Mm-hmm. It was graduated up a step ladder, step by step. Well, with this particular product, the air freshener, he said to the buyer, is there anything, I'm sorry they didn't sell. I know you as a buyer aren't looking good now to your boss, and we'll take them back. But is there anything in car air fresheners that we've missed that you're unhappy with? That one question turned my company's worth from maybe $100 million to $300 million. That question.
Really?
The buyer said, thanks for asking. I've been telling the tree company and all these other companies, make me female air fresheners. 72% of my buyers are female. Chris comes back. I'm madder than a pistol. I've just lost $650,000 on the Bug that didn't work. And he comes back and says, before you get mad and upset that we lost our big deal, here's what the buyer just told me. I just go, duh. We hurried and made super minimum viable product.
Okay.
Photographs of, we copied, copy, angle. Resources we do. A lot of kids come up with a good copy angle, but they don't have the resources.
Exactly.
Well, then quit messing with it. Wait till you get there. Well, I had the resources. So we made these virtual pictures. We copied the platforms that were already being sold in them and made them female. So female packaging, female fragrance, and sent the pictures. He goes, the buyer goes, you've nailed it. We sent those, we took 6 months to make some product. We called it Refresh Your Car. We got it to him. He put it on the shelf again, gave us a second chance since it was his idea. And the company started to blow up. And so, because both air fresheners had, you know, come from automotive, black ice.
Mm-hmm.
And here the biggest retailer in the country's saying, would you bring me female? I think females would like to buy air fresheners that look female.
Do it.
And so even though it was a mature industry, the angle was overlooked, you know. But I do want to go back before I forget.
Okay.
I got something fun story.
Yeah, oh,
a lot of them are failures. Here's one where I got cocky. After about 10 years, I got a nice boat again. Everything's paid for in cash now. I didn't have any debt.
Let's go.
We didn't have any company debt.
Learned a lesson, really.
I didn't have company debt. I didn't have any personal debt. After the motorhome, I bought a small home, and I'd said I'd never buy a bigger home until I paid cash.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never had debt since then. And I didn't care about the people that say, why don't you buy other companies? I go, not interested. I just want a good income. Young people would come in, entrepreneurs like yourself, and say, when are we going to sell? And I go, are you happy here? He goes, oh, I love it here. Do you make a lot of money? I make a lot of money. And my stock's going up. Then why are we selling? And they go, oh, okay. And most of them, looking back, are really glad we didn't sell till years later because we had a good environment. It's not easy to start a business.
No.
It's not easy to create a culture where everyone's actualized, loving what they're doing, teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy to just replicate. But anyway, after about 10 years at Lake Powell, I'm down there just enjoying the good life. I'm making money. I've got some air fresheners, consumable.
Let's go.
You know, getting just a little pride.
Living on
just
a houseboat.
A little bit. Houseboat, oh yeah, nice houseboat.
Of course, yeah.
And that fellow's company that couldn't buy us, I feel like what they did, this is my best recollection, that they went and got some Kylers and Cadens and some other sharp kids, put them in a room and said, come up with an angle that's going to beat, just like the air freshener we beat. Come up with an angle that we can get in the mouse mat business and quit having them make our own and we can make our own. So they got in a room. They brainstormed. I lost a little bit of the eye of the tiger down at Lake Powell. And they came up with an angle that knocked us hard.
Ooh.
Someone in that angle said, hey, no one's ever gone after licenses for mouse mats like Disney. Why don't we take our corporation to Disney and say, what better product should be on mouse mats than Disney characters?
Donald Duck.
So all of those buyers go, Don, we like you better. But our buyers and our stores, they want Disney. And Fellows has Disney and you don't. So we're switching to them. Because we didn't keep that eye of the tiger full bore. So that was good. That was a good. Ooh. Now we recovered. We got Looney Tunes. We got NFL and we started getting other licenses.
Good.
But that always hurt us and gave us a good wake up call to not lose. Stay a specialist. Stay what you're doing. Don't get too broad. And so that went great. Air fresheners, we ended up making a good foothold with female air fresheners, and pretty soon we started getting into the novelty air fresheners, Bahama, and
Bali.
Yeah, all those are ours. And then pretty soon we got back in. At the very end, we decided to go against the companies with the black ice and that. And
yep.
We got products called Driven and different types that were really good for back to that market. But great team of people. And then, yes, eventually what happened was I became about 60. Chris Anderson and great other partners that were like Chris, they're going, you know, we'd really like to grow the company a lot more. And I go, well, I know what you're thinking. That means a lot of debt to go buy these companies. I tell you what, get me, I'm 60. If that's your dream, you've helped build my dream. If that's your dream, then go ahead. And I had incredible Rod Stewart, Alan Wheatley, all these incredible people. I said, get me an equity investor that gets me half my money. And then if you blow it, you blow it. And I'm fine financially anyway. So they got a big company out of Florida that was very bright, good people. They wanted really Chris Anderson to steal him to run one of their companies.
Oh, really?
But I had locked him in so tight with my company, he couldn't leave. And so they bought half of us. I got my money. Then I became like on the board of directors. And then I started to manage a portfolio. I have four or five big charities in Africa. And and then volunteer full-time at the college. So I started doing what I do. They went out and they went into a lot of debt and bought four other companies, and that's how we became the largest car air freshener company in the world. And then in 2016, Energizer, the battery company, bought our company. And so
the air freshener company?
Yeah, they bought the air freshener company.
Why is that? A battery company?
Yeah, battery company. Because the battery company, it's called a, you have equity buyers, they'll buy for multiple and then they want to build it. But if you have a strategic partner, you get the most multiple.
Okay.
Because what they can do is buy your product and then just start shipping it in their huger distribution throughout the world.
Yes.
And so they can get rid of a bunch of your people and they don't have to work very hard to just start saying to the rest of the world, these are the best air fresheners in the world. And they just, so they can really magnify it. So they'll give you a higher value if they're a strategic partner. And so we were able to sell the company at that time.
So you basically, you said you brought in the equity partner and they bought you out halfway?
It was before Energizer bought us.
Okay.
They came in. And they really want to grow the company along with my senior entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So they were smart partners. Not, you know, we talk about money being smart money, not only getting money for investors, but wise people that help give you decisions. So this equity partner was super smart in the industry to help us make sure who we bought, how we bought them, and help Chris Anderson and the team, Rod Stewart and the team. So they would come in and so they bought half the company or 60-70% of it really.
Okay.
And then 2 years later they grew it really big and then sold it to.
And you still had equity at that point?
Oh yeah, I still own a lot. That's awesome. I don't have $360 million, but I'm okay. I can get around.
Yeah.
But now I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I have now new businesses. I have an arthritis product that was developed from BYU that could be the first product in the world that will rebuild cartilage. And so we're doing lots of cool things with that. And but probably my biggest love is just teaching here.
Yeah.
I take the students.
Yeah.
And having a riot.
So that's what I was talking to my mom right before this about what you're doing, right? How you build these companies, created a ton of success, and now you're giving back. And she was like, man, wouldn't that just be the dream for
it's
you
dream.
And to like just grind and learn and then you do what you want when you want, but you choose to serve and to give back.
The reward is unbelievable. To have a Kyler come and say, hey, this has changed business for me. This is, and to have students come back. And we teach a lot of life skills.
Mm-hmm.
I tell kids nowadays, there's so much junk going on, so much arguing and fighting and lack of civility. And what you need to do is rise above it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can teach you life skills to rise above it. And while everyone's arguing, you'll be out and people will notice you're special and notice you're great and they'll want to partner with you. Mm-hmm. And they'll want to do something with you too. We teach in the entrepreneurship, besides the keys of starting a business, we teach finance. I'll have young people come and say, what would you recommend they invest with? I go, your own budget. You don't keep a budget, you're not going to run a good business. And no matter how much you make, you won't have money. So you need to learn how to be financially responsible and learn basic budgeting skills. Then we teach basic be physically conditioned. I play the football coach every Tuesday and Thursday, pickleball.
No way.
Paul, head football coach, because I'm 70, but I want to be active.
Yeah.
So 40 years ago, I started gaining a lot of weight. And all of a sudden, I go, wait a minute, I don't want to be 70 and not be in shape and live life as good as I can. So I started to exercise every day for 40 years. Nothing that rigorous. As you can see, those puppies haven't seen a lot of weights. So I don't worry too much.
Still running around, though. It's 70 playing pickleball.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
No, I'm in pretty good shape. You know, I can play with the best of them.
Yeah.
And but life skills, physical, mental, mindful skills,
mm-hmm.
Mind management, meditation.
Yes.
Spiritual. I gave the class today. You know, I'm not afraid to talk about God, talk about any faith that builds character, builds faith in God, builds moral values. I go the integrity. I go a lot of people that invest with me or they have me in partner because they know I'm pretty transparent and they can trust me. Not that I'm right, but I'm able to say, hey, I don't know that. Or, and I'm able to just, you know, be pretty honest about it.
So hearing your story, so we talked about the air freshener. Was that the same company as the mouse pad?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Good question. Yeah, okay. There were two different divisions, but yes. So the computer accessory company kind of mellowed out at about $20 million in sales, and the air freshener is about $70
million. Okay.
But then you look at your bottom line and probably could get 5 times earnings, but because it's a strategic buyer, we were able to get 8 times profitability. So that's awesome.
I haven't heard of that, strategic buyer.
Yeah.
So for example, right now with Bin Blasters, right? We're talking with someone that, with a St. George location, someone that owns a cleaning company, and they want to take all the customers they have, over 1,000 customers,
yes,
and sell our product to them.
Yeah.
Bin cleaning.
Yeah. So that would be a strategic. They should pay more than most anybody else. Other people are investors. I'm by your company, and I'm looking at what I'm going to make and times earnings. So it's just a, you want a multiple of earnings. Say you want 2 or 3 years of earnings. So I'm going to invest because I know in after 3 years, I'm going to make all that profit and I'm pay for it. But a strategic partner can get sales so much faster, grow it so much faster. So they can buy your company. And that's a great point, Caden. They can buy your company and they can expand it tenfold. So they're willing to pay more for it.
It's good to know.
Yeah.
Wow. Something interesting. So thinking about it from the young hustlers perspective that are listening, your car method, right?
Yep.
For the longest time, I almost felt guilty having that mindset of copying a product.
Yep.
Like, oh, I'm stealing. Like, I can't be doing that.
Yep.
But you look at any product, and someone stole it.
Quit arguing.
There's hardly anything that's actually original. How do you overcome that? Help the listeners, because I know they're thinking that.
Well, here's how the safest business is a business you are in. And that is franchising.
Mm-hmm.
That's 90% success. If you do the research, like your business, it's a winner. Mm-hmm. It's going to work.
Proven, yeah.
Now, if they're a winner, hard work, financially responsible, all the things you're now deciding who is best for your franchise, when you're hungry, you go take anybody. But as you build up a brand with your franchise, you're going to say, hey, this is who we're looking for, that type of person. And so that's the most success. The next most success, I think, is a person that's working in a business and they're going, wait a minute, they're not filling that niche. They're not filling that angle. I'm going to leave this company and I'm going to go start doing that. They've already proven it's there. They've already proven by copy that it's successful and they're just making an angle. The biggest problem that I have at entrepreneurship is that I teach and drive it in and half still don't pay attention. But as I go, you don't follow car. You come up with a brilliant new idea. This is what I do, Caden. I have the students in class. I want to prove it by data that I'm right. So I'll have the students say, I'll say, everyone that knows someone who owns their own business, stand. 3/4 of the class stands. Sit down if any of those invented a new product. 98% sit down. I go, does that teach you anything? They copied. They either only copied or they copied and made it a little better.
Mm.
And then R is, do you have the resources? So I smile. If they don't want to listen, then that's fine. And they come up with a pitch and they have the best idea ever. And then it's a copy, and it's an angle. But then they don't listen to the R. Do you have the resources?
Mm.
And if it's an incredible product, they can maybe find the resources. I can help them with that. But they don't have the resources. And most investors, now, we not only want a good idea, we're investing in the team. And if you don't have any experience, the reality is we're not going to invest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And now a lot of us investors are going, if you don't actually even have traction, sales, We're not interested. So why don't you get that reality in your brain and start something that's simple? Build it up. See, in your case, I would say in Caden, I'd say, well, you know, someone go out and just start cleaning garbage cans with a power washer. That's it. Start there. You'll start to learn. You'll start to learn marketing. You're in the middle of the fight. And those principles will carry you to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, but now you have added resources. So you can build a truck. You can build a trailer. But now there's a lot of things you and I still can't do. And I don't waste my time thinking about it. I am doing one that's cost millions of dollars with arthritis. And I've put about $3 million into it. Mm-hmm. And now my next level, the value we think with the science we continue to bring forth and the proof, the value will be $50 million. And we're going to need about $15 million. I'll probably put $2 million in, but now we have big players that are each going to put in five or six. But I'm going up the ladder. Mm-hmm. I'm a weakling compared to most people. I don't care. It's not a competition against people. I don't compare. Huh. And now arthritis wonder. I number one reason is to solve arthritis. I don't need more money.
It's to solve the problem.
I want to solve the problem. And that's why I've got four or five major charities in Africa.
Yeah,
Charity Water.
That, yeah.
I'm in the luckiest guy in the world. And when I didn't have much money, I was playing pickleball when I was 30 years old, 33, just starting the new business, mm-hmm. playing pickleball at a place. And a guy comes up to me, he goes, hey, my wife's a nurse. She goes to the Philippines every year as a nurse. She volunteers 2 weeks of her 4-week vacation. She goes with doctors and nurses to operate on children with a big gapping lip, cleft lip and palate. And would you help give her $100 for her airfare? I go, yes. She volunteers 2 weeks of her vacation every year? Yes. These doctors all give their time for free? Yes. Yes. After a year, I call up Norfolk, Virginia, and say, how can I get more involved? Because I'm making more money now. And they said, well, you can be in charge of a Utah Operation Smile. I go, okay. So I called the plastic surgeon. He happened to be... I moved California in eighth grade. But when I was young, I lived in this plastic surgeon's neighborhood. This is 20 years later. I had never talked to him since.
Uh-huh.
He's the plastic surgeon that goes for free, and he's trying to raise the money too. And I go, oh my heck, grave care. I go, how can I help? He goes, you can be in charge of raising money now. I'm doing the surgeries. You can raise the money. I'm trying to do both. So I became very involved. I've been involved in Operation Smile and have traveled different parts of the world to help doctors and nurses. And then we have Charity Water, which is a fantastic organization. Young women, girls, and mothers throughout the world spend half their day hauling, 2 hours a day hauling water from places to their homes. So now we're providing water, wells and water in these places. There's... Engage Now Africa. We're building schools and hospitals in Africa. And it's just extremely rewarding. I'm not living like a pauper. I have plenty of nice things. And so no one's going to feel sorry for me. But I have plenty of money to help people. Mm-hmm. But I'm tough. On these charities, I investigate them. I want every dime of my money going for good. And so I really do due diligence, just like I do in a business. If I'm going to invest in a business or a charity, it's the same. I know what the CEO makes. I know what marketing does. I know what everything is. And I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world. And candidly, my dad in eighth grade had a doctorate of education. I was the only child that was not doing well in school. And I found myself going down to the principal's office, and they did an IQ test. And I like to say, well, at home, my dad was no longer mad that I wasn't bringing home good grades. He was just sad because I wasn't very smart. That lady said, oh, he's not that smart.
Mm.
But there's lots of ways to be smart. And I'm a bit obsessive. I'm ADD, and I'm a problem solver. And if they don't want to call that IQ, that's fine. I don't care. But I tell my BYU students, when I have 300 or 400 of them, I go, you guys are all 10 times smarter than me. And I'll beat you with the problem most every time because I'll go out and get the smartest people to join my team.
That's it right there.
That's it.
That's right, all maybe hiring smarter people.
That's right. And not feeling bad about it.
Hey, yeah.
I'm happy all the way to the day.
And you tell them, like, look, I'm dumb. Like, you guys are a lot smarter than me.
Yeah.
That's why I need you on my team.
Yeah. I've rewarded great people. And they've done a great job, and they're all millionaires.
Do you set the expectation in the beginning? Say you see someone, a who on your team, or that you want to have on your team, and you say, hey, here's the structure. If you come on and you work with us, here's how you can get equity when you hit X amount of sales or whatever. How do you set that up?
You know, for me, and it probably would vary, but for me, I was able to pretty much just say, 90% of my people didn't own stock. And when I sold the company, I gave each person a lot of money.
Mm.
I didn't have to, but I had plenty, and they earned the money. So, start handing out stock right and left. It was the people that I call entrepreneurs that were thinking outside the box, working extra hours, coming up, going, I can't afford to lose them. Those were the people that got stock.
Yes.
And so,
in the moments that they stay.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. And a few early on, even Chris Anderson, early on, I told him when he came to work for me, I said, you know what, you'll be here 2 years before I even consider stock. After 9 months, he did some unbelievable things. He went into my partners in a meeting, not directly to me, and said, hey, I've done this and this, I want stock now. And I said, looks like you're gone. He goes, what? And my partners are going, why are you saying that? I said, because I told you 2 years. And you've gone around me, and that's not integrity. I told you 2 years. He goes, yes, sir. I won't do that again. And then I just started at 2 years, really rewarding him.
Yeah.
And he deserved
loyalty.
It. But I'm tough. I expect.
So you're able to be that bold with people.
Yeah.
People you love,
yeah.
That you
and
work
then,
with.
And then candidly, because I have I'm a sinner, okay? I do dumb things. But I have pretty good honesty and integrity. And so when our company started to blow up, my guys couldn't handle the growth. My office, my warehouse people, my accounting people, all those people, I needed to get seasoned veterans. Well, I went out to get the seasoned veterans. I knew they heard about us, wanted to work there, but they wanted the stock. And I gave them some, but I go, you're going to have to trust me. You go talk to all my people and see if I won't in time. But I'm not going to gamble on you. You're going to have to gamble on me. And so my top executives, they came in, talked to the other guy, said, quit worrying about, you'll be taken care of. Don't worry about it. So that paid pretty big dividends to always be honest and fair. So they came in, and the company hadn't grown big, real big at that time. And so I wasn't willing to throw out big salaries and stock. But they all came in, and I took care of them. And they're as happy as can be, and they're all running other really big companies.
Good for them. Oh, my God.
But I don't think they'd ever, probably all of them say they had near as much fun as when we were all together.
In the grind.
Yeah, in the grind.
Day-to-day.
And in our culture. We had a great culture. We had a really good culture of work ethic, family first. And on my mission, I had up in Vancouver, British Columbia, they put me in charge of public relations, and there had never been that job. And I go, good, I'll make this work. So I called up Salt Lake KSL. I said, do you have any promotional things? And they go, yeah, we got billboards. So they had a billboard that said, no success in life can compensate for failure in the home.
Mm.
I went into the BBC in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I said, hey, do you do a public service for a billboard for good values? They go, yeah. So it was downtown Vancouver, huge. David Olenkay, no success in life can compensate for failure in the home. And I would like to emphasize that we do here at the school have entrepreneurs come in. As a matter of fact, you're speaking in a few weeks.
Uh-huh.
And love your story. And it's perfect for car and everything.
Yeah, there's a lot I can share. I'm excited.
But I have these entrepreneurs come in, and students can evaluate them. And a lot of them at the end of it say, I sacrificed my family for 10 years. I'm not sure I would have done that again. And so I know when I started my second time around, I go, goal isn't to be a multimillionaire. The goal is to have a good living, a good family, a good business that I can control. But I'm not going to sacrifice my young kids and not be with them.
Mm.
And so that's, and I, and most of the guys I talk to are entrepreneurs. They go, that's the one regret, is they didn't maybe have a balance and find the balance.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, who really gives a darn of your children if they go, yeah, he was a, worth a couple hundred million, but we never saw him.
Who wants, what's the point?
Who wants that? What's the point? He was a dink, and we never knew him, but great. You know, it's always stuck in my mind. Going, my wife's father never had a lot of money, and we all love him to death and just go, wish it could be like him. Mm-hmm. So it's finding that place for entrepreneurship. I love business. I love it. But I know what's, you asked me, you know, a couple of questions like, what would I say about, you know, first of all, I'd say the golden rule, like it's he who has the gold makes the rules. I don't like that one. I like God first, and then the true gold is loving your neighbor.
Mm.
And that's, I got so many friends that are just probably as happy, I mean, so envious of my situation. But I've been involved, there's a lot of older people that say, I'll come down and teach. Well, I've been teaching for 20 years, so I know where the kids are at. It doesn't do any good for an old person to come in and start telling their war stories from 30 years ago if it isn't relating to today. So I put in my effort, but man, am I getting the payback.
Oh, so much fun. So your story is so inspiring because you started from the beginning. I mean, looking back on it, you're in a motorhome. Well, first you lose it all.
I lost it all at 30.
And your wife, she trusts you to flip and put the kids in a motorhome, and you're driving around selling to businesses.
We both can't believe it.
Homeschooling. Like, I can't believe she was on board.
Me either.
And the fact that you made it work and you built this company worth hundreds of millions, and now you give back with your five different charities, teaching at school, playing pickleball. Like, just like, it's so funny. Don, I show up to class the first day, and Don's in a whole, so just so you can know what Don's like, he pulls up to class with a Hawaii shirt on and flip-flops. And he's like sitting on the table, just like swinging his legs. Like,
hey, I'm a volunteer, professor. Baby.
It's awesome. Because it's real world.
You show it's real world. But I got to emphasize, I really hope people believe this. There was just so many times my partner and I go, we didn't deserve this.
Mm.
This break, this timing. Now, we had lots of bad times that we fought through. But we go, where did that come from? So I've tried never to get arrogant, going, I could die tomorrow of cancer. Anything could happen. And so I don't take much, I don't get cocky, because I know it can be gone like that, because I feel like good effort, good work ethic, being honest, doing the right thing is helpful, but there can be great blessings that are far beyond anything that I've done.
Mm.
You know, I really believe that. I'm very fortunate, extremely fortunate.
Because you're in a spot to give back.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. Because, like, what's so inspiring? So part of my life motto is to have the time. I wrote this out when I was 14. I have the time, money, and resources to serve anyone in need at any time, right? And in my mind, business is just a vehicle to be able to achieve that goal. That's all it is.
It is a great vehicle.
Yeah.
And it's a blast to go through all the efforts of family. We have families to grow and progress. Mm-hmm. If you're single and you don't have that, some of my kids haven't had the blessing of being married, one of them. And so that blessing of that family dynamic of sacrifice and growth, which he wish he had, doesn't help that growth. Business, family, all that growth. It's really the growth of failure. And that I can't go anywhere without failure. I feel so bad. My wife's an introvert and she's a perfectionist. That's a battle. That's a battle. She knows she would hate business. She, you know, and my students that are perfectionists, we used to when I was young, a business plan. 4 months. We got rid of that. Now it's, get your idea, get a minimum viable product, dive in and see if it's a good idea. And if it isn't, move. Get moving. I mean, you know.
Test.
Yeah. Don't go, sorry, Atwood Innovation Center. Don't go get a business license till you got traction. Get out there and get selling. And then everything will, then you can go get your license. But we get your idea and then make it work. Test it like I did at the Apple store. Test it that it's viable, that the buyers want it, that the customer wants it. Not that you think it's great. We have so many inventors that are in their garage still because they're not living in the minds of the customer. I never even hardly used air fresheners. Largest air freshener company in the world. I don't care. I want to meet those people's needs. And I want to make a lot of money so I can do a lot of good. That's what you said.
Largest air freshener company.
Do you just love garbage?
No.
Are you provide?
Well, you saw the picture of me cleaning into the dumpster.
Yeah, you love that?
Yeah. No.
Does it bother you?
No.
I love your business.
Yeah.
I love your business model. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think you're in a great spot.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting. And all it is because I see, okay, I'm going to go all in with it now because this is how I can get the most resources to serve more and more people. Because I'm setting up and I'm selling franchises and making other people more money and rich to also amplify their...
In business, capitalism is fantastic. Yeah. Socialism sucks. It might be the best for maybe heaven, you know, that we don't care about money and I don't know. But in this life... You know, it's a nice attitude,
mm-hmm.
but it needs to come from within, not government required. We help more people. America helps more people in disadvantaged areas throughout the world because of capitalists.
Yeah, you get incentivized to do so.
Yeah, you know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and these guys, they give millions and millions and millions and millions away because of capitalism.
Mm.
But I'm excited about what you're doing. The thing is, I look at you, Kate, and Kyler and others, is it's grit. It's intentional.
Uh-huh.
It's not our brains. It's that fight.
Uh-huh.
When I hit a wall, like when I was 30, 3 days of stinking, and then I'm back to work.
Mm.
I'm figuring it out.
Mm.
And it's I'm gritty.
Yeah. You're talking about that in class. That is why... The podcast logo right behind you is actually Rocky Balboa. And we changed him to where he's holding up two number
one. Oh, I love that.
Because Rocky
I love that.
Is one of the most inspiring figures of my life because it's the whole fact that it's not about it's not about how hard you can hit, but it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. That's where winners are made.
Well, look at you. So, how many surgeries did you say you've had?
Four.
Four. Yeah. So to me, we teach... Most investors that I've met with and I work with, we want the product to be amazing.
Okay.
Like your product with your garbage...
Bin blasters.
But more important, we'll take the person, the team.
Interesting.
The product's got to be an 8 or 9, but the team's got to be a 10 or 9. And see, with you, because you're not a quitter, because you're going to fight through things, I know that you're going to be successful. So the odds are good that I'd invest with you
mm-hmm.
if you have a good product too.
Yeah.
But you'll figure it out like you already have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that grit.
Yeah.
That tenacious. And that's why, you know, Doc here, he doesn't want anybody to share any ideas. Chris and I, we say, share your ideas because most people don't have the grit.
Yeah. Or the time to get after it.
Well, they have the time. They just don't make the time. They don't have the grit. They don't have the passion and performance. You know, and it's just gritty people. My grades were, I remember reading a report card from my parents, and my parents were again worried about my grades in 7th, 8th grade. And this one teacher wrote, quit worrying about this son. He's going to do great. And I think she saw my passion, my fight, I like people. Mm-hmm. And she saw things, and they were just looking at the technical skills.
Yes, so yeah. Black and white.
So black and white, as opposed to the intrinsic fight and determination and problem-solving ability.
That's what's unique about business, too. You're talking about it in class. It's not so linear.
No.
There's so many ways to solve problems.
Yeah, but one thing I had people tell me, and I really didn't know this, is I'm a bit ADD. I'm also obsessive. I have almost a weakness, so that if I obsess on something, I came home one time, I have a nice farm up in Alpine, and I had three barns and horses and everything. And in the middle of the barns, there's a gravel driveway, And I come drive around the house. I look way out by the barns in the middle of the driveway. They're wood barns. They're antique barns. And I look out in the middle of the driveway, and there's smoke and a fire in the middle of the driveway, the road base. I race out there because I'm going, what's going on? There can't be a fire around here. And I had a horse trailer, a big horse trailer that had a silver front. And the sun was coming down on that silver front and then returning to a pile of horse manure. Uh-huh. And it was starting that horse manure on fire. And that's I'm obsessive. And so they'll say, well, don't mess with Don right now. He's obsessively focusing on solving that problem.
Interesting.
But the problem is then I, even at this age, I'll obsess on a good presentation for my students. And then I wake up at 4 a.m. and I can't sleep. And I hate that. But I'm obsessive.
Fully involved. You're all in.
Yeah,
all in. You're doing.
And it's good, but it's also a pain. Later in life, I got tractors. So at 4 o'clock, I'd come home off work and start to try to relax. Well, you got it. You got the mouthful. You got the fire hose, baby.
Oh, my gosh. Well, before we wrap up with the last questions, how can my listeners serve and support you with what you got going on? They're all young hustlers.
Well, that's take my class.
Do it. Come with me. What is it? Monday?
Monday, Wednesday. It's under the name of Chris Brown or Sam Clark. So take entrepreneurship. We let people just show up.
That's what I did. I started just saying.
We're not into that. We're not teaching like most, like. Napoleon Hill was an old time. What did he write? Think and Grow Rich. My favorite one of the students here gave me. He says, I like the favorite one. It says, Outwitting the Devil.
Oh, I've heard of that.
But you got to read that one. And I'd listen to it.
Because it's a devil speaking to another devil, right?
Yeah. This guy gets to interview the devil and says, tell us all your techniques. And his technique is that teach the way people teach. He loves it, where here's what you need to know, regurgitate it back.
And forget it.
And that's why I didn't, my memory wasn't crazy good. It isn't great. It is if I'm obsessing on something. But generally, to test well, I don't. But the point that I think that, I kind of lost my train of thought, which usually happens a lot more than that.
You're talking about outwitting the devil.
Oh, outwitting, thank you.
Yeah.
Outwitting the devil. And so outwitting the devil is just trying to say, if you want to teach a student, get them involved in a discussion. Have them learn, have them apply, then have them evaluate, then do it over again. It's just that process and not worrying about failure. Mm-hmm. Kobe Bryant gives the best ones on failure, going, I don't know what that is. It's just a process of progression. I don't know that that's exactly where I was going, but anyway, I must be getting...
So, if you guys,
I guess the advantage you have, students, you got young people have so much available to you in podcasts, in good books, and research.
So much.
You have so much available. Mentorship, you have your networking groups. Find a mentor that specializes in finally what you want to do. Otherwise, the mentor doesn't have too much interest to stick with you. They want to see that you're asking good questions. So I would say that it's just so big, it's hard for me to capsulize it into a few things. But in essence, I would just say dive in with Carr and make mistakes and learn and progress and start at the first levels of the ladder. And then those principles will apply to most everything else you'll do.